Blog Talk Radio.
So welcome to Super Soul Sunday After Show, hosted by Life Coach Radio Show. Today we are November 24th, 2013, and we just spent an hour watching Oprah talk with Sandy Hook parents Francine and David Wheeler and how they are coping after losing their six-year-old son, Benjamin, in the horrific shooting nearly 1 year ago. My name is Claudette Chenevere, and I'm joined with my two co-hosts, Joel Riedens and Reverend Jennifer Hope Kotler. So before we start the discussion about Super Soul Sunday, let me share a little bit more about Life Coach Radio Show and our co-hosts. Life Coach Radio Network comprises of Life Coach Radio Network and International Coach Radio and Life Coach Chat Channel that were the brainchild of creator, executive, and producer host Russ Terry. He brought together over 40 life coaches around the world to share their wisdom, expertise, and professional coaching techniques for you for free. The shows air daily and are on various topics people are struggling with, such as relationship, career, finance, and personal development, and more. So my first co-host for today is Joel Riedens. Joel is a personal development coach working with gay men and others in areas such as life purpose, relationship, career fulfillment, spirituality, and personal identity. He believes that with the right guidance, you can create life-altering shifts in perspectives that can break down self-imposed barriers and reconnect you to your true self. Through individual and group coaching, he partners with his clients to overcome fear of success, failure and judgment by others to help them identify their dreams and reach their full self-expressed potential. Joel is a regular co-host on the Life Coach Radio Network, offering his listeners professional coaching advice that impacts many areas in their lives. Joel earned his CPC accreditation from the Institute of Professional Excellence in Coaching and also graduated from IPEC's Energy Leadership Program. In addition, Joel worked in corporate America for many years, having a variety of management and coaching-specific roles. He lives in New York City with his partner, Matt. Joel's passions include running his charity, the William Fund, helping his clients achieve their goal, traveling, writing, and spending time with family and friends. So welcome to the show, Joel.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And I'd like to introduce our next co-host, who is Reverend Jennifer Hope Kotler. Reverend Jennifer Hope Kotler is a spiritual direction and life purpose coach who works with folks who want to develop and deepen their spiritual life and tap into their life's vocation. A former teacher, pastor, community organizer, and advocate, Reverend Jen works with her clients to uncover the deepest purpose for their life. A solo host on Life Coach Radio Network since its debut in May 2013, Jen is the host of Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen, which airs on the second and fourth Mondays of each month at 8 p.m. Her next show, which airs tomorrow night at 8 p.m., will feature a founder of the hip-hop spirituality movement, Minister Walter Hidalgo. The founder of Spiritual Engagement Energy and Direction, a.k.a. SEED, she is most passionate about helping every client to live their best and most meaningful lives ever. A widely published author, she has written for Sojourners Magazine and for the Huffington Post and is working on two books. Her blog, Shifting the Script, shares her coaching philosophy that everyone can rewrite their life at every moment and should make conscious choices about how to move forward every day. Hello, Reverend Jennifer. I don't know, maybe you're on mute. we'll come back with her in a few minutes. And let me introduce myself, Claudette Chenevere, and I'm known as the Stepmom Coach, and I work with married women who find themselves being mothers to their spouse's kids and are not sure of their role in this family. I am a master certified step family coach as well as a trained results coaching system coach. Along with being an author and a speaker, I coach one-on-one as well as group coaching. My mission is to help step families come together to create a more harmonious and peaceful home, taking it one step at a time. And you can find more about what I do on my website, which is www.stepmomcoach.com. Thank you. All right. So today we were listening to Super Soul Sunday with Oprah on the topic of Sandy Hook and the parents of Benjamin Wheeler. And I hope you had an opportunity.
I just wanted to let you know, Claudette, that I'm here. I mentioned it in the studio, so I took care of that. It's good to be here. So thanks so much for the great introduction.
Thank you. I'm glad you're here. So we have Joel and Jennifer on the line, and we'll be discussing what we just, we listened to the show, and we like to have a conversation about what we heard. And the first thing that I would like for us to have a conversation around and was the grief process. And I think a lot of times when something happens like this, we are asking ourselves, how can we help a person that's grieving? Or, you know, what is the process? Is there a process? And I'd like to hear from you, Joel, to start with. What was it that you heard when they talked about grief, and what are some of your comments or insights around this?
The one thing that stood out for me right at the beginning of the show is they said that they were dealing with feelings of fear and guilt around Ben's death. David Wheeler, Ben's father, said that he, as human beings, we have a tendency to want to control our reality. And as a result, when something like this happens, some kind of traumatic event, some kind of, terrible loss, we have a tendency to recap it and play it back, in our head and think about the ways that we could have taken control. And the fact of the matter is we don't have control over our reality at all. We don't have control over situations as they unfold, especially in situations like this. And I think that that's very important for anyone who's gone through something like this or lost someone very special to them, for them to understand that part of the grieving process is forgiving themselves and being kind to themselves and being patient to themselves as they go through the process. And also to understand, something that was mentioned I found very powerful in the show was the idea that everybody experiences the grieving process differently. We need to respect each other's differences. So we need to be patient and understanding with everybody on their own individual paths as they get through the grief storm.
Some great points. And, I like that you addressed the fear and guilt, and we'll talk a little bit more about this during our hour together. Jennifer, what are your thoughts about what we heard on Super Soul Sunday around grief and the process that they shared on the show?
Sure. As a pastor, I've dealt with a lot of families and individual spouses who have lost a loved one who's very dear to them. And it's really an individual process that folks go through when they're dealing with loss. And certainly with this kind of loss, where it's so unexpected, it's so tragic, there's not one process. And as Joel was saying, you have all kinds of guilt that you go through. You have all kinds of, woulda, coulda, shoulda, what could I have done differently that maybe would have created a different outcome. And for most folks, for the folks who I've walked through this process with, one of my favorite expressions is the only way through is through. And you have to deal with the emotions as they come up. And you really need to be in, continue to strive to be in a space where you can stay connected to your emotions without allowing your emotions to overwhelm you.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you also mentioned, you know, the woulda, shoulda, coulda, because one of the things that I believe it was Francine who mentioned that she kept asking herself, what if I had decided not to bring Benjamin to school that morning? And she said there were a lot of instances or key, you know, little moments where she said, you know, he had the sniffles, and or I could have taken him to the play or the rehearsal that day instead of going to school. And, you know, I think it's David who mentioned it's our nature to second-guess ourselves, to ask ourselves, you know, what is it that I could have done differently, or what if I had done something differently? So what are some of your comments around the should've, could've, or second-guessing ourselves, especially in the hindsight of a tragic event like this?
So just like what I say, you know, we already touched upon this, the ideas of having misplaced feelings of, you know, of guilt or having, you know, or blame. And so, again, I think it's important for us to recognize that those feelings are indeed misplaced. They're naturally occurring feelings in situations like this, but you understand that you need to approach them from a place of forgiveness and understanding and try to release them as soon as possible so you can continue to deal with your own feelings of grief and loss in a healthy manner. I think it's only natural that we look back into this in situations of loss and think about ways in which, you know, we could have operated differently within the confines of those relationships, or in, you know, maybe even the physical manner in the actions we took that day as a way that we could have changed the outcome. But I think in the end, you know, understanding that those are, you know, natural feelings, and that they're part of the grieving process, but ultimately they won't serve you or serve a purpose long-term as you go through the grieving process. I think that's something very important to take away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would just add that those what-if scenarios don't just apply to the families of the children who were killed. I actually live in a community that's very not very far from Sandy Hook, and one of the women in my husband's congregation is a grandmother of a child who attends Sandy Hook, and she was in the first grade, and like that, her room was next, and you know, all of those feelings of, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, didn't, can I change the outcome, what if. Are haunting both the parents of the children who were killed, but also the parents of the surviving children. That it's a very natural place for us to go emotionally to ask ourselves, well, you know, what if things had been different? What if it had been my child? And so just to appreciate that is really an emotion that runs the gamut for folks who are in that community and who really and truly have all been affected very, very deeply by this tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, you both brought some great points about, you know, that it's a natural process, or it's a natural thing to ask ourselves those questions. And although it's a natural process, I think that we often ask ourselves, you know, what does that mean for me? You know, and for some people, they may go and say, what did I do to deserve this? although it's not to them, you know, that's a question that some people will ask themselves, what did I do to deserve this event happening in my life, or this tragedy, or this, you know, what's coming towards me? And so if you have someone who asks yourself, and I know that David and Francine did not address this, but I know that sometimes when you work with people, they may be asking yourselves those questions, and I want to have an opportunity to maybe address this in case some of our listeners are asking themselves those questions. So what would you say to someone who asks themselves, you know, what did I do to deserve this, or those kinds of questions? So, Joel, do you have any comments or insights around someone who asks themselves that? Are you still with us, Joel?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me now?
Yes, no problem.
Okay, sorry about that. So, you know, I was just saying that, you know, that's a really powerful question, and I don't think it has an easy answer, especially when someone is in the middle of their grief process and trying to deal with a recent tragedy. But I really like what David said, and this is, again, towards the beginning of the show. He goes, it really doesn't matter what you expect out of life. It only matters what life expects out of you. And in acceptance of, you know, of these occurrences, of these tragedies, is an important step in finding your way out of the dark. And I would add to that by saying it's not only accepting that these situations happened, it's also determining what your choices are and what you're going to do with the tragedy. So, you know, for any of us who have lost somebody, especially for those who have lost someone, you know, tragically and suddenly, I think that, you know, you're left with two choices. You're a fork in the road, and you know, one of the choices is to let this tragedy consume you, to be swallowed by the darkness and be rendered powerless, to lash out and to blame the world and to point the finger and you know, and to ask those types of questions like, what did I do to deserve this? But I think there's another choice, and it might be a choice you get to in time after you go through the grieving process, but it's, you know, what have I learned as a result of this tragedy? Mm-hmm. What are the gifts and the loss that I can share, you know, with the world, and how can I make the world a better place as a result of my personal growth dealing with this tragedy?
I love what you just shared with us, Joel, in that, you know, instead of asking, and it's true, we have two choices, you know, to look at it from a fear or guilt or fear and love, and you're proposing here, instead of asking yourself the question of why did this happen to me or what did I do to deserve this, I love that you turned it around and said, what can I learn from this? And to make it more of a proactive approach and to use it to move forward. And the conversations we listened to with Francine and David about this is exactly what they did. They're turning this experience into something that is proactive, in to learn about themselves in a way that they can hopefully make a difference long term. Mm-hmm. Of course, you don't do this on the first days, and they did talk about where, you know, immediately it wasn't something they were able to have, like, clear thinking. It comes over time. So yes, I love what you shared. Jennifer, what are some of your thoughts around the concept of when someone says to you, what did I do to deserve this? How would you address this question?
You know, and in my experience and professional, sort of a professional hazard, is the comment of, well, you know, God has a purpose for this, or what, you know, why is God punishing me? And, you know, I immediately try to reassure folks who are going through this kind of tragedy that certainly from my perspective as a pastor and a person of faith, the God that I understand as the God of love doesn't cause someone to go into an elementary school and shoot children. And that God in that moment on December 14th is in the midst of that and really weeps and grieves and is holding the families and holding those children in love. And I know for some of our listeners may not be really comfortable with the God language, so I would really invite people to sort of substitute the word love for God, because that's the understanding that I certainly have of a God who loves us so much and would not, could not certainly cause these kinds of things to happen. And yet, you know, too often, people are trying to do the right thing, you know, people are trying to say the right thing and are trying to be comforting in these moments. And unfortunately, are not able to do that in a way that is really helpful for the family. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, it has been just, you know, can you be there? Can you just be present with the family? You don't have to know what to say, because certainly in tragedies like this, there really aren't words to say in the moment, mm-hmm. just to be present and to love folks through this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so powerful, Jen, what you just said. I think it's important to remember, and I think that we both kind of answered your question in the same way, which is, you know, you can't answer that question. What did I do to deserve this, or why did God let this happen, or questions like that. You can't answer those questions. You certainly can't answer those questions to anybody's satisfaction in a situation like that. And so, like Jen said, you know, when a tragedy like that happens and you talk about whether it be God or a higher power or the universe or love or whatever, where was it in that tragedy? You know, my response to a situation like that would be, he was there in the people that were helping out. He was there, mm-hmm. you know, in the people that were holding other people while they were crying or picking people up off the ground after they got in the bad news. They were there in the community support and the international response to the community of Sandy Hook. That's where God was, or that's where your higher power was, or that's where love was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah, I love both what you're sharing. And you know, it's true. How can you respond to that? And it's really difficult in that we don't have all the answers. We only have bits and pieces of that bigger piece of puzzle, and we're trying to fit them in one little piece at a time. And each of us individually holds that piece of that puzzle, and until we can, you know, come together and have a conversation and, you know, be clear about ourselves and our journey, I think it's hard to answer any of those questions into making it sense at the moment. And maybe one day we'll say, okay, I have a clearer understanding of my purpose, not why it happened, but my purpose, my role in here. And which brings me to asking about self-care. And I know we talked about this a little during our time before the show here and during the time we listened to Super Soul Sunday, the importance of self-care. And I know that Francine and David shared, they both had different views about self-care. So my question is, how important is it for us to practice self-care and to be a support for another person? And what does that look like?
I love when Francine was talking about being able to go into her toolbox. And on those days when it was just really hard, and she's very heartfelt, in a very heartfelt way, expressed how, you know, there are just days when you cry and it takes all of your energy to get out of bed. And I hope for maybe some folks who are experiencing that kind of grief, that helps them to normalize that, to know that, you know, that's really normal. And to be able to say that over time, you know, those days get fewer, but there are things that you can do, and Oprah certainly hit on this with both David and Francine, about how they, in the way that they're living and in their own spiritual lives, have been able to sort of draw from that and gain strength from that as they're sort of just continuing to walk forward, day by day.
Nice. Yeah, and I love that you use the word toolbox. I think it's something that's a visual aid that we can actually help us in understanding. I know I have a variety of toolbox, and I share those toolbox with my clients in that to help them move forward. And sometimes we don't know what we already have, and that's what Francine mentioned. She didn't realize all she already possessed as tools to help her move forward. And she referred to, you know, her gratitude list and her affirmations and the community she had. She didn't realize, you know, the importance. She drew from the community more than she realized. And David mentioned that too. Joel, what are your thoughts about self-care and how to get that and support yourself?
Well, I think one of the things that they talked about, you know, if you notice, Francine and David's toolboxes were very different. The things that they did for self-care, the things that they did to deal with difficult days were different, were very different. You know, David retreated into himself and into a place of spiritual contemplation where he looked at his thoughts from a place of peace and love. And Francine went for a run. Francine would call a friend. Francine would make a list of the things that she was grateful for. So she was more externally focused in a lot of her actions. And so what I think that our viewers should take away from this is everybody's toolbox is different. And so I think the first thing that we all need to do when we're going through situations like this is identify our own tools in our toolbox. What are the things that we can do to take care of ourselves in situations like this, to take care of ourselves when we're in the middle of the grieving process and we're tripping over ourselves and we're having a terrible day? What are the things that we can do? And for extroverts, a lot of it is the external focused things that Francine talked about. It is picking up the phone and calling a friend. It is going for a run. You know, it is like, you know, maybe it's, you know, jumping into the deep end of your job and, you know, engulfing yourself in your work. For other people, for the more introverted folks on the call, maybe they operate like David does, which is you know, spend some alone time, or retreat into your head and think about what, you know, how it's meaningful to you. Maybe it's journaling. So it's recognizing what your tools are in your toolbox, and also recognizing that, you know, self care is a very individualized approach, and you need to determine what works best for you.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I like that we are addressing like tools that can actually make a difference, and that we're all different. You know, like Francine mentioned, she would spend a day crying. And, you know, that could, I see crying as cleansing of your soul, of getting rid of those toxic emotions that we sometimes hold on to, you know, that revenge, that bitterness that's in our mouths and in our bodies. And when you cry it, you relieve it, you let it go. And it's not something that's easy, or it's not the same for everybody. Again, we're talking about Super Soul Sunday, the Sandy Hook parents that had a conversation with Oprah this morning. And if you're interested in sharing your thoughts or comments, please call us on our line, which is 646-716-3937. And before we continue, I just want to share with you that we have shows every day on Blog Talk Radio, and if you love what you're hearing, please join us tomorrow on November 25th at 8 p.m. We have Reverend Jennifer, who's on a call with us today, who will talk about spiritually speaking. And then on day November 26th at 12 noon, we have Fund to Fortune Entrepreneur Success, who is going to talk about sing and dance on Broadway. And then on the 28th, we have Gain Perspective with Andrea Richelman. And so, again, join us every day. We have shows on all kinds of topics, and you can also listen to our archives anytime. So, all right, so I would love to talk a little bit more about letting go of control, and I know we talked about this a little bit, but I want more specifically to, you know, address the things that, you know, we're trying to control everything in our life. We're trying to control, you know, who we let in, who we let out, and controlling our safety. And I'd like to have a little bit more conversation about, you know, are we trying to over-control our lives, and, you know, what can we do about it? How can we move out of over-controlling, if that's what we do? So, Joel, do you want to start with this?
Sure. You know, one of the things that I bring up with my clients on a regular basis is I talk about the idea of letting go of the wheel and letting the car steer itself. Oftentimes, I think, especially in this day and age, we have a tendency to try to micromanage every detail of our life. We try to force things into happening. So, you know, for example, we're alone and we want to meet somebody and we try to force it to happen, or you know, we try to force interpersonal relationships, try to force outcomes at work. And I think the fact of the matter is that I speak to this from more of a universal perspective, a more spiritual perspective that I'm sure Jen could easily speak to. But I think it's a matter of just trusting in your path and trusting in the universe. And just, you know, letting go of the need to try to micromanage every detail of your life and letting go of the need to try to control every minute detail of your life and just concentrating on just the very next step in your life and not trying to look for, you know, try to focus on every single outcome in your life and how you can manage them and how you can ensure, you know, a certain outcome. Because I don't really think we have that type of control. And I think as a result of trying to micromanage and control every aspect of our lives, I think that's why we end up so frustrated and we end up so exhausted and we end up so stressed out in our lives. So I think it's really about just kind of letting go of the wheel, asking for divine guidance, and seeing where you end up on a regular basis.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's so spot on. But in bringing this back to kind of the language that David and Francine were using, it was, you know, how are we making our decisions? Are we making our decisions out of fear or out of love? And I think very often when we're caught up in that control mode, it's because we're fearful. We're fearful that if we don't, if we aren't in control, if we aren't the one driving the bus, so to speak, then we're certainly not going to get where we're supposed to be going. But I feel like often, and certainly with my clients, because I really do encourage them to make their decision out of love rather than out of fear. And that really takes away that whole need to feel like you have to be in control. And to be able, I love the language that you used, Joel, about taking your hands off the wheel and trusting the path and, you know, appreciating that we will move forward and we should certainly be focused and intentional about where it is that we feel called in our lives to be, but that it's a societal epidemic of this need to be in such tight control. And if you're not, then it's almost, you know, people will treat you as if there's something wrong with you because you should want to be and experience that level of control. But to really sort of sit back and say, how am I going to, you know, in this very moment, in this particular moment, how am I going to decide on the side of love rather than make a decision that's coming from my own fear, my own insecurity, my own need for control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with both of you. I mean, we love the illusion of control, but we can't control anything. Controlling another person is similar to, you know, preventing them from living. And anybody who has children and is a parent would understand you can't control your kids. You can guide them, you can direct them, but you don't control kids. And, you know, you can't control every step of the way of what you live, because then you're saying to other people what you're doing isn't okay. I know what is best for you, so let me tell you how to do it. And so whatever aspect of your life you think you control, the reality is you're not. You're stifling other people into doing what you think is the right way, which may or may not be true. But, you know, again, would you like someone else to do that to you also? And so it's really a question of asking yourself, you know, if I want to control everything, am I willing to let others control me? Because we all want the same thing. And so
that's,
if you're controlling, well, the thing is, yeah, if you're controlling, the other people will want to do the same. And so the more you control others or your environment, the more they will want to do the same to you. And so sometimes just letting go, whether it's on a faith-based process, whether it's trusting the universe, whatever your belief system is, you know, if you have that faith, then you don't need to have that control, because you're trusting. You're trusting what's going to happen, that although you may not understand what's going on and you are angry or you are sad, and that's okay, it just means that, you know, somewhere along the line you will get an answer, maybe to help you make sense of all of this. And, you know, that's not easy. That's really not easy.
And I think that, you know, that's a really great point, because that is talking about sitting with yourself and being silent and listening for the answers too. You know, I mean, it's really being open to, you know, universal guidance and being open to finding the answers to your own life's questions within. And we live in a very externally focused environment and a very externally focused society. I recently wrote about this, but a really interesting tidbit is that we receive more marketing in one day from a variety of different sources, TV, internet, billboards, radio, than we did in an entire year in the 1950s, just to put things in perspective. All kinds of programming that tells us if we buy that car, if we have this house, if we meet that man or woman, if we wear these clothes, we will be successful. So we find ourselves externally focused, looking for the answers to our life's question. Well, would we spend our time externally focused, doing those things that we're being told we should do? That feeds into control. That feeds into our need to control. So if we just took a step back from all that, sat with ourselves, sat in silence, journaled, took long walks, meditated, whatever you feel, whatever you're comfortable doing for yourself, and just, you know, sat in your stillness, then, and you know, retreated inward, that's when you start to find the answers to your own life questions. That's when you start to, you know, kind of almost take an active role in steering your own ship, but you're steering it towards the best possible outcome.
Mm-hmm.
What a great insight, Jill. That's
beautiful.
Really helpful in putting things in perspective. I know in the community where I live, it's a pretty affluent community, and it was recently a part of a conversation around, you know, what are the burning questions for people. And they aren't, you know, where am I going to buy my next car, or, you know, what is going to be on my Christmas list. The burning questions are, what is the real meaning of my life? Because at the end of the day, you figure out, especially when you have the money to basically, you know, purchase whatever it is that, you know, has been put out there, that this is going to satisfy you and this is going to make your life better. And, you know, if we could all just get that Lexus with the big red bow around it for Christmas, you know, then that's all there is, and that you will be happy. But we know that that isn't what drives individuals to be happy. It's having work that has meaning. It's having relationships that are deep and enriching and feed us, both intellectually and spiritually. I loved David and Francine and David saying that they have a head and heart marriage, that they are both deeply spiritual and that they, you know, they, but they're also intellectual. You know, they can have that intellectual question and wrestle with these really deep questions of meaning, but they're connected at the heart level as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I love that you, Jennifer, that you brought in that in order to be happy, it's not stuff. You know, happiness is defined more about having meaning and having a purpose, you know, because, you know, you look at Francine and David and you're asking yourself, how can they ever be happy? They lost a son. Yes, they have Nate. They have another one, and they're trying to make sure that Nate isn't, that doesn't get sucked in the grief process of everything, that he doesn't disappear with all of this, so they keep him there. But I think what's keeping all of them moving forward is having a purpose. And part of that purpose they have is, you know, the Sandy Hook promise. And part of that promise is hearts are broken, but not their spirits. And so, again, they're having a new purpose in their life. They're focusing on how to make changes. And so one of our of the questions that was addressed on the show was around gun control. And I would like for us to have a conversation or touch about this. And so what did you hear them talk when they talked about gun control? And so let's go with this.
You know, the one thing that I really thought was powerful is the way David was approaching it. He was approaching it from a place of, you know, negotiation and understanding. And he said, you cannot demonize or villainize someone if they don't agree with you or the conversation is over. And we simply can't do this any longer when we're talking about things like gun control. And that was a really powerful thing. And it was also, you know, trying to understand the other person, asking the questions that you need to gain clarity, like, why do you feel that you need a magazine with 30 bullets in it? What is the fear-based belief system that you have that's telling you you need an automatic weapon in your home? You know, because the conversation, they said, it is not about having guns in your home. No one's trying to take, you know, take guns out of people's homes, but it's the type of weaponry and that kind of weaponry that goes into school and can mow down multiple people in a very short period of time. It's why do we feel the need that that type of, you know, weapon be on the street and readily accessible to so many people? And why has there been another half a dozen school shootings since Sandy Hook? It's really time to sit down and understand both sides of the table, understand the belief systems around it, where it's coming from. Is it fear-based? Is it love-based? Trying to truly have a deep and meaningful conversation so there can, a middle ground can be reached. Because I think right now, I think it is a lot of finger pointing, a lot of blame, a lot of fear, and I think it shuts down, you know, the deep and meaningful negotiation before it even has a chance to get started.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Reverend Jen.
And it really does come down to fear. You know, what is it, what is the fear that's driving the need for automatic weapons and for large magazines? And who is driving that fear? You know, what is it that, and again, you know, when folks are making these decisions out of fear and not out of love, it's hard to have a conversation with folks who are in that space of making the decisions and listening to that fear-based part of their brain. But I loved it when Oprah asked Francine and David if they considered themselves advocates. And, you know, and this was in the context of talking about how they had been advocating on Capitol Hill for the background check law that was not able to to get through Congress. And, you know, Francie responded, I'm an advocate for love rather than fear. And David responded, I'm an advocate for common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, part of the Sandy Hook promise is that this time things will be different. And so how do we, you know, and they also talked about taking that, this tragedy, and using that as a force for transformation. So I guess the question for me as we sort of, you know, move into this last phase of our conversation is how, you know, how would that look? What would a real change look like? And how can we have those conversations, Joel, that you were talking about, that don't demonize those who don't agree with you, but there can be a real sharing of an understanding and a negotiation around how can we continue to allow people to have guns in their homes and at the same time safeguard children who are at school or in a movie theater or mm-hmm. you know anywhere else that these tragedies have occurred.
I think it also speaks to the idea of healing an ailing society. So it's also determining, maybe it starts with negotiating and having a middle ground about how the types of guns we have in our home. But then I think after that, we go deeper, and then we say, why do you feel the need to have the guns to begin with? Mm. Because maybe it's determining what people's individual fears are, you know, what their individual need for control is about. And then once we start healing those ills, and maybe then we can start disarming people slowly but surely. Nothing that, you know, will be done overnight, but it's understanding why people feel the need to use guns to begin with. And I am by no means saying that people shouldn't have the right to have a gun in their home. I'm not advocating for or against at this point. I'm just saying that there is a reason why people are fighting so aggressively on both sides of the table. Even if you take the big gun companies out of it with their lobbyists and the millions of dollars they're pouring into Washington, which obviously is the humongous component of it, take that out. The people who are carrying guns and carrying these automatic weapons fight fervently for them. So the question then becomes, where's the disconnect here? Where is the fear here? Why do they feel that they need to control their lives with automatic weapons? So it's you know, how do we heal an ailing society? You know, and you know, and try to, you know, decrease the divide between the two sides.
Mm. And you both brought some great points. Again, you know, when we are thinking about the decision process, are we making this decision out of fear or love? And Joel, you mentioned again, you know, giving space. And a lot of it, again, we're coming back to control. You know, why are we having this fear of being controlled or that our control is being taken away from us? And, you know, there are no great solutions, and it's not something that's going to be solved within, you know, and within this 1 hour conversation. But I think when we start opening the doors and having, being respectful of listening to the other person and not being afraid of hearing what that other person has to say. I think that if we are afraid of listening to someone else's point of view, then we shut down and then we don't want to hear anything. And when we open up and say, I'm willing to listen, I'm willing to hear what you have to say, I may not agree with you, and that is okay. But just the fact of letting that other person know you're willing to hear what they have to say without agreeing or disagreeing, but giving that opportunity, you never know what happens. They may come to a point where through that conversation they're sharing, they may see themselves, you know what, I don't think that it makes sense anymore. And I think it's important to ask ourselves, if the belief I have now, does it still serve my purpose? No. Is it okay to still believe something I believed 10, 20, 30 years ago? Is it still working for me? Is it still serving my purpose? And so giving that space for conversation, for the dialogue, without the threat of being ridiculed, judged, criticized, I think is part of, you know, moving forward. It's not the perfect solution, but I think we need to have a dialogue. And when we let our emotions overtake us, or fear of control, or fear of not being heard, or fear of being perceived as good or bad, really prevents us from listening fully to everything that's being said and finding a solution that will help everybody. So that's my take on this.
Amazing.
All right, so we're already getting close to the top of the hour, and we've had some amazing conversations. Again, we are the Super Soul Sunday After Show, and we were discussing the Sandy Hook conversation of David and Francine with Oprah today. And I am with my two co-hosts, Reverend Jennifer Hope Colt and Joel Redens. And before we wrap up for our show, I just want to let you know that, you know, if these are the kind of show you enjoy listening, we are here every day. We have a variety of shows. We have one coming up tomorrow, November 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Reverend Jen on Spiritually Speaking. And then we have another one on November 26th at 12 noon Eastern. And it's Fun to Fortune Entrepreneur Success. And if you happen to miss a show and you want to listen, go to the archives. You can download them, listen to some of our past shows. There are some amazing shows here, and we're here to help you. We're here to provide some guidance, support, resources, and some humor in all of this at the same time. And so listen to the shows and join us, share with your friends, let other people know we're here, and we look forward to hearing more about you. So let's wrap up a little bit. So what are some of the ahas or some of the insightful moments that you got either during the show that we listened before us or during our conversation here? Joel, I'll start with you.
I think, you know, and these are things I already touched upon, but just a couple of the things that, you know, they talked about in the show that were so amazing. And so, you know, the one thing David said, the key, you know, it really doesn't matter what you expect of life. It only matters what life expects of you. It's this type of acceptance that's an important step in finding your way out of the dark. And so I would just, you know, say to all of our listeners today that, you know, when tragedy happens in any form in our lives, it's important to be patient with yourself, be understanding with yourself as you go through the grieving process. But then also, when you start to feel better, when you're able to pull yourself back up and get out of bed every morning and start to function again, it's important to ask yourself some big questions. Ask yourself what the lessons were learned here. Ask yourself how you are a better person as a result of going through this and how you can make the world a better place. I think it's about taking tragedy and turning it into something meaningful and powerful. And I also think, you know, the last thing I'll say is, you know, I loved what David said about you can't do a wrong to others even though a wrong has been done for you. Our society lives in a eye for an eye kind of mentality, I think, in many ways. And I think it's not until all of us, you know, all human beings, as a species, let go and begin to forgive and put our guns down and put our judgments down and put our discriminations down, that we're actually going to make real strides towards becoming one community globally.
You're absolutely right, Joel. That's an amazing insight. I was thinking about this as you were talking. I do think it's pretty amazing what Francine shared at the very end of the show about how Ben loves lighthouses. And, you know, when she said, you know, what does a lighthouse do? A lighthouse guides us. It, you know, it paves the way through the darkness. And it was just such wonderful imagery of light and darkness, of this understanding of spirituality being on a path. And they said that, you know, Ben is on the path that's ahead of us. Ben is with God. And that there is, that is one of the things that they hold on to as they are sort of moving forward in their lives, as they're moving forward in their grief process. Because certainly for them, the grieving never ends. Oprah talked about how when someone's lost a child, they talk about that this is a new normal. So they, you know, the fact that they now have a new normal, that they're not exactly sure how things will affect them. They've talked about that, the triggers. They're not exactly sure how each of those triggers will affect them. But one of the things that was certainly clear is that it does, that there are these pieces, and there are days in which, you know, they may think, I'm going to get through this just fine. And there are always emotional things that come up for them. And there are other moments that they're thinking, I'm not sure how I'm going to get through this. And yet there's there was a blessing that came out of that time. So those were the, you know, I think for me, some of the powerful takeaways from the show today. And just, I just love the image of Ben and his love of lighthouses. And, you know, maybe there was a reason for that. If for nothing else, that it brings comfort to David and Francine and Nate as they continue their journey towards their journey in life, in their new normal.
So thank you both. I'm sorry I dropped off, and I did not get to hear your ahas. I apologize for that. And I'm sure they were great. And let me share a little bit some of my ahas as we wrap up our call today. And I'll probably be repeating some of the things you both mentioned. And again, I'm sorry I wasn't there. So some of the ahas I got from this was that, you know, when I watched the show, Francine and David talk with Oprah, I was really impressed with how strong the couple were together. And we mentioned it a little bit where, you know, these kinds of tragedies can really tear a couple apart. And they were able to stay together, to continue to build their marriage, their relationship, using the tools they had at hand, accepting that either one had different sets of tools, and they were dealing and coping with the grieving process of all that's happened to them. And for me, you know, when I see how they came together, they could have easily divorced. I mean, I see that as a stepmom coach, I often see couples being torn by things a lot less traumatic as this, no less important, because each person lives through their own ordeals and handle it in their own ways. But, you know, this is a beautiful example of what they took, something that could have torn them apart. But, in fact, I see them, and I couldn't see what kind of relationship they had before,
but you see they are really there for each other. They are supporting one another. So that, for me, was a very powerful moment, and that, you know, we can overcome practically anything in our lives when we know what to do, when we ask ourselves those important questions, as Joel and Reverend Jen mentioned. You know, ask yourself those questions. Take the time to reflect. Take the time to care, self-care, to care for yourself, and also care for your partner. But if you can't take, if you don't take care of yourself first, you can't take care of another person because you're empty. You can't give what you don't have. And so this message that we heard here, there's a lot of different messages. And I hope that when you do listen to the archive and you listen to the messages that we shared with you today, that you are able to grab something that fits for you, that you can find some answers that you may have been asking yourself. You weren't sure of how to deal with certain issues. And I hope that we provided you with some of those tools to help you in your life. And I would like to ask Joel and then Reverend Jen to let us know how you can reach either one of us if our message resonated with you. Please connect with us, contact us. So, Joel, if you don't mind, how can people reach you and get in touch with you?
Okay, so I can be reached at joelreadence.com. Let me spell my last name. It's R-E-A-D-E-N-T-E, joelreadence.com. You can email me at joel@joelreadence.com. My Twitter handle is joelreadence, one word, and you can reach me on Facebook at joelreadencecoaching.
And Reverend Jen.
Yes, thanks, Claudia. This has been a great show. Thanks for all of you who are listening. I can be reached at, as I said, my company name is Spiritual Energy Engagement and Direction, which is SEED. So my website is www.seedspiritualcoaching.com. And I can be reached at jennifer@seedspiritualcoaching.com. And I certainly would love to hear from folks if they are interested in exploring their understanding of spirituality more deeply.
Great. Thank you. And my name, again, is Claudette Chenevere, and I work with stepmoms. And so if you are in a stepfamily and looking for help or support, you can reach me on my website at www.stepmomcoach.com. And if you prefer social media, you just need to Google the Stepmom Coach and you will find me. Again, if you want to follow us on the radio show, find more about the radio show, upcoming events that are coming, whether they're live or on the radio, please follow us on Facebook at Life Coach Radio Network, and friend us, like us, share us with your friends. Let people know we're there. We would love to hear more suggestions. If you have a radio show that you would love to know more about, have us talk about, give us your suggestions. We'd love to hear it. So thank you so much for being here. Have a great and wonderful rest of your day. Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
everybody.
You, Joel. Thank you,
thanks.
Reverend Jen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.